Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
Not much, man. It's the weather's colder. I experienced my first snow of the season.
Excellent.
So it's we're progressing.
I've had my first nasty cold head
lung
thing already this year. I usually don't get it this bad. I usually don't get colds this, but you know.
Well, you know.
This has knocked me.
You're elderly, so.
Not as elderly as you. Old guy.
I'm young at heart.
You're young at heart. Sure you are. Sure. That makes up for it. Yeah. How's the old walker going?
I painted it red. It's faster now.
It's faster. I put flames on my walker, so it makes it look like I'm going faster. None of the old people in the home want to race me now.
I'm not making fun of old people. I'm making fun of myself.
Not me. I'm making fun of old people. Because if you can't make fun of them, who can you make fun of? I mean, they can't chase you down. I laugh at everybody equally, including myself. Because if you can't laugh at yourself, then you got no reason to laugh at anybody else.
I was waiting for something inappropriate to come out. It's like, we're recording.
Well, if you want to hear something inappropriate. So let's jump right in because not much has been happening here. Yeah, you did potentially your last canoe trip of the season.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee it's the last canoe trip for the season.
Almost. Never almost. Say never.
That's why I say almost. There's always possibilities.
Right.
I might get some incredible offer or maybe I'll win the lotto and I'll go camping in South America and canoeing in South America. Who knows?
See? It may not be.
As they say, if you win the lotto. Oh, by the way, I did win the lotto.
$10?
$51.60. Plus two free plays.
Woo!
I'm living the high life.
Look at you, Mr. Rich Man over there.
She dropped the ticket in front of me, and I didn't understand what I was looking at. I said, what's that? She goes, that's your win. $51.60? What is that?
Times how many people in the pool?
Yeah, who knows? Well, no, I'm not in the pool.
Oh, isn't
that? No, that was just me.
Oh.
I pocketed $51.60.
Wow. Start the car!
I'm going to try not to spend it all in one place.
I walked to my boss's office and quit. I'm out of here! I ain't taking my $51.60 and making tracks, baby.
So that was
see ya, suckers!
When my recent trip, when I was buying groceries and stuff for it, I had my ticket scanned, and that's what it was. So it helped pay for some of my groceries.
Excellent. Excellent. Every little bit.
I was very confused, though. I was like, what is this? What are you showing me? Anyways. So, yes, recent trip.
I forgot what we were talking about.
Lottery win aside.
All I can think of was, Derek's in the money. You're definitely buying beers.
It's my second biggest win ever.
I won $106 once.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I won $87 when I was in college.
In college, man, that's a fortune. That's why your buddies look at you, wow, you're buying beer at Barnum, aren't
you? Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, your last canoe trip of the season.
Yes.
You headed north to Algonquin.
Yes, we did. It was, there's a lot of debate. Everybody was debating Islet, Rain Lake, yada, yada, yada. We wanted an access lake, and most people didn't even want a portage in. They just wanted access lake.
And then you can do day trips from there.
Exactly. And
we did. Especially this time of year, you're bringing more gear to stay warm, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want to portage all that.
Exactly. So it was nice. It was a really good weather weekend. Like, on the way in, so I came in late. I got out of the house late. I got out of the Rain Lake at, like, 3 o'clock, 5 to 3. And so took me about an hour and a half of slow paddling. Had some otters squeaking and yelling at me. They were upset that I was on their lake, and I didn't see it myself, but Mike said he saw a bull moose or something. So on the way in, I had a little bit of rain, which then turned to ice balls, and then snow. And it's like, well, I just passed through several seasons.
All at once.
Yeah. But it was nice. By the time it turned to snow, it was it's like, well, you're not getting wet from snow. It was dry snow. It was nice and cold. So, and then it was clear the rest of the weekend. It was sunny and everything on Saturday, and then just overcast but warm on Sunday, and super rainy on the way out on Monday. It was like
couldn't let you get away with it.
Nope. So I didn't get wet. I had some good rain gear on, so I was pleased with that. But yeah, it was a really good weekend. It was so other than the decent weather. It was, like I said, I got out late. It was a bit of a paddle in. The boys didn't expect me to show up because I ended up showing up. So 3:15 on the water, 1.5 hours, 4:45. So I was about an hour away from dark. Sunset was around 6. So they were like, nobody else is coming in. I said, what's this?
Hello.
I had time to set up my tent. I had plenty of time to set up the tent and there still had some light left. So that was nice. It was, I had my hammock tent, my Opiongo, Aerial A1, whatever it was. And, I think I finally resolved the complication of that stupid tent because I could never get it tight enough so it doesn't tip over on me. So I just added a ratchet strap from a tie down strap and I got it nice and tight, like tuning a guitar tight. It was, yeah. So the canvas bands were nice and tight, and so I never flipped once all weekend. It was nice.
That's always handy.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping upside down.
Yeah, I woke up a few times. Like, why am I sleeping on mesh? Like Hennessy hammock. I've rolled and slept on mesh a couple times on those. I move a lot in my sleep. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I'm fighting all the evils of the world in my sleep. But yeah, it was probably a bad choice to do it hammock style. Because the nights, like Mike said that, or the boys are saying that it was like -5 Friday night and -5 Saturday night. But I think it was much colder on the Saturday night. It felt like it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I made some bad choices when it came to keep myself alive and warm.
Well, apparently it worked, whatever you did.
It did. It did.
Because you're alive.
Yeah. So what was it? The first night. Well, it's got a downfilled underquilt, and so the downfilled underquilt theoretically keeps you nice and warm, but so what is it, Friday night, I woke up at about, somewhere around 3-ish, and it's like, okay, I'm shaking from the cold, so I hopped up and broke out some of those chemical hand and foot warmers.
Oh, yeah.
So I stuck some on my feet, put some in my pockets, put on a pair of gloves, put on another layer or two of clothes, whatever I could find. And then that got me through last night. It was fine after that. With those little, just all it takes sometimes is just your feet being warm.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. And so that got me through that night. And the second night was, it was about the same time, maybe 2:00. It was like, oh, this is much colder. This is much, much colder. And so I had it was packed in a separate bag all by itself, a dry bag, and I had to pull out the whole card. I had to. I've had this electric jacket that I never use, and it's just a battery powered jacket. So I threw that on and threw my other jacket over top of it and hit the button, and I was toasty.
You have an electric jacket.
I do. It packs up very small, smaller than an Algene.
Just takes one battery, or?
Yeah, it takes just one battery. It's a high output battery. It's tiny.
And then it just...
So you turn it on, and it'll run for about 15 minutes and turn off. So you have to periodically turn it back on. It won't just turn on and stay on.
Hmm.
And so it, I guess, to save battery.
Roast chicken in the hammock.
Yeah. So there's a couple of heat settings on it. And I started on the high to get myself warmed up and then put it on the medium setting and just kind of stayed toasty all night long.
Every 15 minutes, you're waking up and turning it back on?
No, once I got my core temperature back up again with the high temperature, the medium setting, just I think I only turn it on like twice more throughout the night.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was enough. It was enough.
Hmm.
Just to get the edge off, right?
An electric
Plus, I put the
jacket.
Hot packs again on my feet.
Right.
To keep my feet warm. So, yeah. So, I think the biggest mistake I made was I have this new puffy sleeping bag that I bought for a previous trip. And it's like, oh, it's really thick. It's really puffy. It just seems like it should be much warmer. It's a plus six bag.
Oh.
But it was like...
Plus six don't work at minus seven.
Well, yeah. But I... The temperature, weather the forecast did not say minus seven. But with the down underquilt, I figured, and my I had an insulated air mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And so down underquilt, insulated air mattress, plus the I had a windshield or a tarp to block the wind. And then that puffy sleep bag, and I thought I had it made. But, yeah, apparently if I was on the ground, it would have been better, but
yeah.
It's so much more comfortable in the air because I don't have like, I don't sleep on the ground so well unless I'm on like an 8-inch mattress. They don't make
then
those.
Then why didn't you just bring an 8-inch or 2 4-inches?
Yeah, there you go.
Tape them together.
So yeah, it was, I have a couple minus 33 bags and I don't like mummy bags. I like my feet to be able to move around. So I just made a last minute decision and grabbed the bag that I took. And I looked at the other two orange MEC bags and said, no, I want my legs to be able to move around. I don't like mummy bags. I never have.
Yeah. I bet you at some point you were thinking,
I
should have just stuck one of those in there anyway.
I should have done that. It was an access site, so I could have brought as much stuff as I wanted.
You could have brought all your sleeping bags.
No, I don't. I have too many sleep bags. Couldn't bring them all. But yeah, so anyways, I learned my lesson there. So,
no, you didn't.
No, I'll do it again.
You'll do it again. We all do. Well, you know, it's not going to be that cold.
Yeah.
I'll just get by with this. Mm-hmm. And then it does get that cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a good trip. I got to see the boys again. So, unfortunately, my Burt Reynolds Memorial River Run trip.
Yep.
So, Mike and Scott and Martin were all supposed to be there, but Martin had to back out last minute. So, it was just, Mark Rubino was there. Rick Dunseith?
Mm-hmm.
So, is that how you say his last name?
I honestly don't know.
Oh. So Rick was there.
Rick was there. I know it was Rick.
Yeah. And then there was Mike and Scott, plus Mark's dog and Mike's dog. And so, yeah, it was good to see the boys. I hadn't seen them in a while because we were apparently not doing the Burt Reynolds run anymore. And
which kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. I got to find new people maybe. Because I still want to do some whitewater. I want to do some more rivers. There's a couple rivers that I haven't got a chance to do yet, so I want to go back and do those. So I got to find somebody to do these rivers with me. But it was nice to meet up with the boys. I hadn't seen them in a while, and got to sit around and chat and joke and whatever. And it was really good to just to meet up with the boys. I had never met Rick before. He's a really cool guy, and so I got to meet him. And, it was unfortunate that, some of the other guys couldn't make it. There's a bunch of other people that just couldn't make it. You included.
Me included.
You were sick. You couldn't make it. Martin felt he had traveled somewhere recently. And so it was too long of a drive for him and after his previous long trip. And the other two boys just, I don't know why they couldn't make it, but they couldn't make it in. So Peak and somebody else.
Glenn.
And Glenn. Yeah. Glenn from Kitchener. Yeah. So, yeah, it was awesome. It was an awesome trip. Like the...
So, Saturday. What did you guys do Saturday? Because it was nice.
Yeah. So, Friday was just a travel day for me. I get in late. Saturday. So, the reason why we were supposed to go to Islet Lake was because there was a certain goal at plan. And so, on... and Maps by Jeff, he's named some lakes for friends. And so...
Unnamed lakes and ponds.
Lakes and ponds that previously had no name associated with them. So hey, it's my map. I can call them what I want. So he did. So the one that we went to was Martin's Puddle. And it was a longer hike than I was expecting. But, I got a lot of exercise that day. And I got my steps in. like 20,000 steps or something. My watch said 7.98 kilometers walked. My watch thinks that rowing a canoe or paddling a canoe is using an elliptical machine. It said, "Oh, congrats, you did so much time on elliptical." I was like, "No, I didn't." We got up early. We're supposed to be off the campsite by 9. End up getting off by about 9:30. Went over to Islet through Hot Lake. At that time, I was solo paddling, and I couldn't keep up with the boys there. So I said, you know what? If we're going to be paddling for 1 hour plus down Islet, I'm going to ride Princess. So I left my canoe behind and sat in the middle with me and Willow. Enjoyed the ride in the brisk morning air. Hiked down about 4-ish kilometers of the Western Uplands Trail.
Yeah, because that goes right down through there.
Yeah, so right along the side of Islet Lake. And it's a nice trail. There's a couple elevation changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a couple that were like, it's like, this is too much work for me.
That was on the backpack trail?
That's the backpack trail.
It doesn't follow the old rail line, does it?
No, it was up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in through little crevasses and rock areas. And
okay.
It was, it was a lot of work. And then we got to, we're navigating by map, trying the best we can to make where we wanted to go. And we found it. We found Martin's Puddle and made some rude video messages for Martin because he canceled the last minute. And basically, Martin, you suck. And so we got to see the puddle is named after him. I think it's a proper lake. It's pretty big. It's a good size. I guess Jeff felt it was more of a puddle than a pond or a lake. But the weather was great. What was neat is it had snowed the night before. And so Mike was in the lead most of the time, and we come up, and I said, are you and Willow clearing trail? Because the whole trail is cleared of snow. And what I realized is that everywhere where people had walked, the leaves were crunched flat to the ground.
Right.
So that had the residual heat of the ground.
Melted.
So you saw this clean, snow-clean trail going through the woods, and there was later in the day when the snow had melted everywhere else, it was like it's a field of freshly fallen leaves. So it's like, I think that's the trail. Willow was really good, so Willow came with us, and she just followed the trail. Once in a while, she got sidetracked by moose poop or something. It's like, okay, where'd Willow go? She's not on the trail anymore. But for the most part, we just followed Willow. She likes to be in the front. We got to Martin's Puddle and then hiked our way back, Western Uplands, and then came back to camp. We were there about an hour plus before sunset. And it was awesome. It was, and there was a time change that night too. So
yes.
So Sunday night, it got dark earlier, or no, later. We tried to figure that out at the time, too. We never did figure that out.
Spring forward, fall back.
Yeah, fall back. So it was 6 becomes 5.
Mm-hmm.
So sunset was at 5 p.m. instead of 6. So, yeah, it was it's a long time to chat around the fire. Because it was cold I think for the most part, I was in my rack 9:30 at night. Every night.
Well, you do get old.
No, it was like, I'm sick and tired of listening to you guys talk, so I'm going to go to bed.
Well, on that, and you're all bundled trying to stay warm by the fire.
Yes.
And then when you actually do leave the fire, that cold all of a sudden hits you, right?
Yeah.
I get that. I'll be sitting around that fire, and you're just like, this is like warm.
Hmm.
And then you get up and you walk away from the fire, and it's just right in your bones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're shivering and... Oh, like, man.
Because it feels extra cold because you were just being cooked by the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so the Sunday was, so the Saturday night, that was the extra cold night. And then woke up the next morning and we didn't really have plans. Somebody had wanted to go visit some lake somewheres. And I said, well, what I'd like to do is that chimney over there on that island, I'd like to go over there and have a fire in it. And so that's ended up what we did. We went over to that little island and brought a bunch of wood with us and had a nice big fire in the old fireplace. And it was nice. It was, we sat around in chairs. We had, some cheese and crackers and bread and stuff like that. And Mike went for a swim. It wasn't that warm, but he went for a swim.
That's Mike for you.
It was cold enough that Mike went in for a swim, but Willow refused. So
when your dog doesn't want to go in, you might be wanting
there's a sign there
to rethink things.
Yeah. I don't think he would have done it if we didn't have a nice roaring fire going for him to warm up in front of. So yeah, it was kind of neat to sit there and watch that old fireplace working its magic, and we sat around and told jokes and chatted, and we were there for 4 or 5 hours, I think. 4 hours.
That long?
Yeah.
Well, it's nice.
We were there by, I think, 11. And then we left and got back, and there's time enough, a little bit of time before sunset at 5 because of the time change. So yeah, it was a neat little, I've wanted to do that since I discovered that standing fireplace, 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I want to have a fire in that thing. But I've always been passing through, right?
Yeah. It sounds like it was, used to be somebody's cottage.
Well, the boys had some theories.
Ralph Bice talks about it in his book.
Does he?
Yeah. Our first camp or cottage to do with tourist trade was built on Rainy Lake in 1925. Charles Waterhouse, who owned Deerhurst Lodge, wanted an outpost for some of his fishermen.
Hmm. So that's what that was.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Ralph Bice's family's cottage.
No. He just talks about it.
He just talks about it.
Yeah. 37 Leopold McCauley and Harry Tyers built a fine log cabin on the island. Later it was sold to the Nunn family. After them, it was returned to Lands and Forests and demolished in 1966.
Do they say what happened to it in 1966?
They destroyed it.
Because...
usually they burned them down.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too, because it's hard to haul that stuff away.
Yeah.
But...
well, that's what happened with a lot of the interior ranger cabins and stuff.
Yeah.
They just, if they weren't...
just burn it.
Yeah, if they weren't falling down, they just burn
it. How do you get rid of it? Like, you can't haul it away. It's not worth the effort.
Yeah.
But Mark thought that the other cabin on Rain Lake next to that island, he was of the impression that they had just picked up as whoever it was being demolished, it was being taken away. So people came and took the wood and made a new cabin like 300 meters away on another point near the island.
Oh, that I don't know.
I don't know either. That's just what he was saying. But you have it there right out of Ralph Bice's mouth that it was part of a...
yeah, the guy that owned the...
Resort
down there, Deerhurst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. But yeah, it's a nice chimney. Somebody put a lot of effort and work into it. It's really starting to crumble. I don't know how many more years it's going to stand. The lower left corner is really starting to crumble. So I'd be worried that it might collapse and crush somebody someday. So I can only assume that the park's keeping an eye on it and they'll do something about it before it becomes a risk.
Well, so. Especially since it's on a access lake.
Exactly. So many more people can go there. And so it's, but it was really neat. It was nice to get her running again and in operation. So then that night, because it got dark early, maybe it was laziness or what, but Mike had chili, Scott had Philly cheesesteak, some kind of meal, and I had like a roast. And so I don't know who had the idea, probably Mike. But he's like, hey, let's combine it. So we dumped all of the random meats into one big pot of chili. And that was our supper. It was good.
I would not want to be sharing a tent with anybody after that.
It was fine.
The dogs were whining all night long.
Oh. my goodness, Willow, like, you know, when she's past gas, like the trees cringe back, like that dog is so stinky. It was like, it just hits you. It's like, what is that? Mike goes, oh, sorry. That's Willow. I recognize it.
Sure, it was Willow, yeah. Mike. Sure. But rule number one, always blame the dog.
She a couple times standing, sitting right next to me, like she was dropping bombs all weekend. Oh, man. It was like, are you okay? Like, when you're outdoors and it affects you that much, it's bad.
Especially outdoors.
Yeah. And dogs, like, you never knew. You only knew because of the smell. She didn't make any noise. It's not like you get the double pleasure of, and then you hear.
It's not like the dog walks up and says, here, pull my finger.
Yeah.
My money's it was Mike.
No, he was downwind. So it was definitely her.
So that was Sunday. You guys had that big old meal.
Yeah, that was nice. It was a really good day. It was rather warm. It was the warmest day of the weekend, and then Monday everybody got up fairly early. Oh, on Sunday morning, Mark left. Mark had something to do, so him and Zuzu, they left. Zuzu, his dog, and then Monday morning we all got up, and it rained a bit during the night, and then stopped for a couple hours. We packed up. In clear weather, and ground was dry and stuff, so it had been that long since it rained last. And then we got on in the canoes, and within like a couple minutes of us starting to paddle, it's like, oh, here comes the rain. And at times it was pretty heavy. And so the access road to Rain Lake is also a combined access road and logging road. So it's kept in pretty good shape. So it had been graded recently. So on the way in, it was like, wow, this is a nice, smooth, clear, yep. wide road. But on the way out, after all that rain, it was the only thing I could think to compare it to was an ice-covered road with a couple inches of slush. So you're driving along, and at even the slightest turn, you feel your car fishtail. And if you're just going in a straight line, it, you know how you get ruts in a road, and mm-hmm. it pulls a car one way, pulls it another way. It's like, oh, it was crazy. It was at one point a truck had passed me going the other way, and both of us slowed down to like 10 kilometers an hour to pass each other. It's like, oh, yeah.
What you got four-wheel drive on your
car? All-wheel drive. Yeah, it's all-wheel drive. But that didn't help. It was it was slipping and sliding sideways. So it was like, oh, this is greasy, so greasy. So yeah, it was a little sketchy at times, but yeah, it was we packed up in a light drizzle and paddled in a heavy rain, and then unpacked the canoes into our vehicles in a light drizzle, and
I hate packing up, putting the canoe and everything on in the rain.
Oh, everything's wet.
Yeah,
everything's wet and. I can't help but wonder how many pounds my car gained on that ride out, because I was throwing mud everywhere.
Yeah.
And the car is filthy on the outside, the rims are coated with mud, and I'm thinking there's like 100 pounds of dirt underneath in the undercarriage.
Time for a car wash.
Yeah, but what's a car wash going to do? Like, there's that underwash, the undercarriage spray doesn't really do that much, so... Well, it's winter. I'm going to hit lots of slush. It'll get washed out over winter. It'll clear up on its own. And I'll have some extra weight to help me keep in contact with the ground all winter long.
See?
Yeah.
See? Pluses and minuses.
It's like a plan.
Always think of the positive stuff.
Yeah.
A silver lining, as it were.
Yeah.
So everybody had a great time.
We did.
Didn't see a lot of animals at all?
Saw some otters.
Mm-hmm.
Saw so many red squirrels. It was insane. And they didn't care that we were there at all. They cut through camp or look at us up really close, and it's like, oh, buddy, what are you doing? And like I said, I think Mike saw a bull moose. And but other than that, I don't recall seeing any. We heard owls every night. Mm-hmm. You could hear across the lake some owl calling out. And something made a weird noise during the night one night, and it was like, that wasn't an owl. What the heck was that?
Mike blaming the dog.
Yeah. Could have been that too. But it did sound like it was from across the lake. So yeah, so that was not a lot of wildlife, but it was cold, and it was really cold at night and rainy on the Monday, rainy on the Friday. So we didn't see a lot, but it was nice to get out, nice to finish it off. Oh, and I this was the first paddle in my freshly repaired canoe.
Oh yes, yeah. Yes.
So Johnny's Boat Shop had repaired it. It's like 20 plus years old, so it's the bones are good, but it's weakening. It's the skin is getting very brittle, and so I have to be careful with it, very, very careful if I want to get any, a couple more years out of it. But yeah,
so it's going to become one of those front yard planter canoes soon.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not doing that. But yeah, it's got some life left into it if I'm careful with it. And the patches are amazing work. Like, the patches are the best part of the entire boat.
So tell them to patch the whole boat.
Exactly.
Just put a giant patch on the entire outside of the boat.
Yeah, Johnny's Boat Shop in Huntsville repaired it for me. Like, what is it? New yoke, new end caps. There was 1, 2, 3 exterior patches he put on. There's 1, 2, 3 interior patches he put on. There's a lot of holes in it. It was very leaky.
Wow.
But
and it's only 20 years old?
Yeah. Well, I was...
But you also...
I was rough with it.
Yeah, you also like to ram up on shore and get out of the boat.
Every time. I still do. I did this time, too.
Yeah.
I did.
I'm one of those guys that get out in the water.
Nah.
Yeah. My boat's still floating. I'm stepping out.
It's a tool. I use it like a tool. And I'm a tool sometimes, too, so.
Now, when it comes to stuff like that, that's one of the biggest.
If I had a new boat, I would be a lot more cautious.
Yeah.
But this thing, like, in the last couple of years, I've had, like, I took it on the Minas Link, and I abused it on the Minas Link. I added a few holes on the Minas Link to it, so. Oh, and do you know the air pockets in the front and the back?
They're not leaking anymore?
No, they don't leak anymore, but the reason it was leaky... And it caused a whole series of things for his repair. So back when we did canoe pulling, I had slid a canoe pole right through that bulkhead. So I had a big canoe pole hole in the bulkhead.
Right.
And so because it was a big hole and I didn't want to patch it myself, and I thought, I'm getting a new canoe. This was before COVID. And so COVID changed prices. So it's like, I'm going to repair it myself. So what I did is I got the low expansion stuff because I didn't want to pop the sides off it, but I got low expanding insulation foam, sprayed that sucker full.
Oh.
And so it the one end, it'll never fill with water. But so he's patched the hole, so now he's sealed in that foam. And because of the foam, I noticed when I was paddling that he's moved the yoke back about an inch, maybe just less than an inch. The yoke is moved back away from the foam-filled core. So I could see all the little pencil marks on the gunnels where he was trying to find the center of balance, and he moved the yoke into the new center of balance. Good for him.
To take into account your gooberishness.
Yeah, and so he just put rivets through the existing holes where the screws were.
Yep.
And then he rehung it, but he properly hung it with rivets to the gunnels instead of like a bolt through the side the way it originally was. So, yeah, he did some really good work to it. Yeah. But, yeah, he had to find a new center balance for the yoke. And it balances perfectly in the shoulders now. It's a really nice portaging boat.
See? Now you just need him to patch the entire outside.
I'd asked him, I said, what's it going to take to re-gel coat the entire outside? He was against it for a couple reasons. He didn't think it was worth it because of the age of the canoe. He didn't think it was worth it because of the weight it would add. And he didn't think it was worth it because you're patching a weak boat in the first place. Like, it's just not going to hold up.
Right.
So it's like putting... I used the term. He didn't. He said, "I." From the way he was talking, it's like, yeah, like putting lipstick on a pig.
Yep.
It's still a pig. So it's workable. It's usable. It's still serviceable. Doesn't leak. Doesn't sink. It was the last couple times. What was it? 2 years ago? Last year. Last year was the last time I used it up at Moon River. And so I could only paddle for an hour before I had to get out and bail because it took on enough water that stuff would start floating. So it's like, okay, hang on. I got to pull this out. I got to empty some water.
That makes for a long day.
Hang on.
Yeah, we're going on a 3-week paddle, and I'm going to stop every hour to bail.
Well, you could let it slide for a bit, but then you have to make sure whatever you're putting in the bottom is waterproof.
I don't want any water on the inside. The water is supposed to be on the outside of the boat, well, and the big open side supposed to be facing up.
Well, right now, the only part that leaks is the big open side.
For now. Scott, stop running it up on rocks, you nerd.
Yeah, oh yeah, he put new skid plates on it too. I forgot to mention that.
That doesn't protect everything.
Brand new skid
plates. Those are just in cases.
No, they're a key component for when I run up on shore.
You do realize there's, unless that skid plate is the entire width.
He should have put it across the entire keel.
So why don't you just go buy a whole bunch of skid plates and deck the entire outside of your boat with skid plates and then get a little name painted on the side, HMCS skid plate.
It's a, you know, that's not a bad idea.
Right?
I like that name.
Yeah.
HMCS skid plate.
His Majesty's canoe.
Yeah.
Oh.
I can have a name flash on my own jacket, life jacket. Captain Skidmark.
But that's another story. You blame on the dog. Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
It was good.
I'm annoyed I had to bail on that one.
It was a good time. It was like there's a lot of really fun conversations and a lot of jokes and a lot of this and that. It was a really good time to I haven't seen a lot of these guys in so long. So yeah. It was a really
That's what I was looking forward to. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I haven't paddled with them in a couple of years now. You know?
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I spent most of my time indoors and not feeling well.
Yeah.
Good times. Good times. I still have a voice thing going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear your voice.
Yeah, I can hear my voice. Anyway. Moving on to another debatable topic.
Oh, yes.
It's becoming debatable.
Yeah. And we're seeing this with a lot of parks now.
Yep. So somebody's posted, apparently this email is going out to people. Dear fellow paddler, as a previous visitor to the French River Provincial Park, we're letting you know of exciting new changes to the backcountry reservation model for 2025.
I laugh at that line.
Yeah.
Exciting new changes.
For who? Beginning Monday, November 25th, 2024, Ontario Parks will be implementing a 5-month in advance site-specific reservation model for all backcountry paddling campsites at French River Provincial Park. And the minute everybody read that,
it's like, oh no.
Oh, let the good times roll. What this means to you, for bookings made in the 2025 season, you'll be able to create your reservation up to 5 months in advance of your arrival date. That means on November 25th, 2024, you will be able to make a reservation for April 25th, 2025. In the past, those seeking to acquire permits were only able to do so up to 14 days in advance.
Which is similar between, like, French River, Tamagami.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, so they, and I kind of like that for these remote parks.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have, it's not like an established like a car camping park or whatever. These are backcountry remote, but.
Where people book and then cancel. Oh, sorry. Was that my outside voice? Did I sound bitter?
Yeah. But with the old system, in which is Tamagami is now, that's still the same. It's, you got 2 weeks ahead. You can't book until 2 weeks out. And so you book and you're booking zones and areas,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think it's a good system. I like that system.
So for bookings made within 5-month window of 2025 season, you will be prompted to select a specific site for each night of your reservation. In the past, reservation holders have been asked to select a zone along the river. updating our reservation system to provide visitors with the ability to choose their preferred backcountry site is one of the ways we're listening to customer feedback and continuously working to improve the visitor experience at Ontario Parks. All previous reservation restrictions will apply when you're booking your site. Bookings can be made online at Ontario Parks reservation website. We look forward to see you in 2025. Sincerely, Ontario Parks.
I've seen a lot of feedback today online. I saw it posted for the first time this morning, and there's been a lot of activity around it. And I like to look at both sides of things. I'm always a coin.
You fence sitter.
I am a fence sitter. But I can see both sides. I can see the benefits, but I also see the risks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of comments made that I agree 100% with. A lot of people out there just waffling back and forth. Wah. But for the most part, a lot of people came in very level-headed about it. It's like, well, you know, like it's great that you can pick a specific site if you're familiar with the sites. And there's a site that you specifically want.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, which a few people pointed out, is French River can, some of the lower sites can be quite exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're prone to, like, if there's bad weather events, they can be hard to get to, and you can be windbound.
Yeah. So I've made a list of pros and cons here.
Okay.
I'll say it right now. I am not a fan of the specific site reservation thing.
It depends on the park.
Nah, I'm not a fan.
No?
Nope, not a fan. I have no problems with the book a lake.
Yeah, I like that
thing, right? So book the lake. There's X amount of sites on the lake. They keep a couple aside, whatever, for just in case emergencies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I prefer the book a lake. Things happen. Maybe you overexerted yourself on a portage or tweaked something and you want to take the first site you find. But you can't because your specific site is on the other end of a big lake.
Yeah, that's the part that...
Right?
I agree. There's a few people brought that up, and it's like, oh, that's... You're kind of forced into taking bigger risks than you might be willing to take.
Right.
So on a bad wind day, it's like, no, I'm not crossing that lake.
Been there, done that.
But now it's like, well, what are you going to do? You have a specific site booked.
Yep. Booking a site you think is good only to find it won't fit your gear. Like if you're three tents and it ends up being a one or two tent.
It's a tiny
site. I've been on sites where they say, oh yeah, this will be three tents. And you get there and you're like,
yeah,
whose tents are you
exactly.
in? Exactly. Yeah. Or it's suited to a much bigger party than you. So you're on a solo trip and you've taken one that'll fit five tents.
Yeah,
sort of deal.
And you see all day large groups passing by.
Passing by, looking at you.
Looking up at you enviously. It's like, are you jerk?
As you say, big water means you have to keep paddling to get to your site, even if the water is dangerous. New paddlers may overestimate the distance they can paddle in a day.
And that's huge.
Yeah.
And
I thought I could go that far.
Yeah.
But.
And there's protections in place for, so Algonquin Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to book, if you know Algonquin Park and you're used to doing big distances or whatever, so you know how far you can go, and you try and book your preferred route, and the computer system won't let you book it and says call. It asks you to call because the person that you contact is going to say, that's a big distance. Are you aware of this, of the time consumption? And you may end up being on the water for 12 hours. You're going to get in after dark. There's a risk and so on.
Yep.
So this here, I hope that they have zoned it out so that if you try and book two sites that are too far apart, it will alert you and say, you must call somebody because you can't book this yourself electronically.
Right. Concern of booking a site that doesn't actually exist. Jeffrey McMurtry brought that up.
He did. He listed a bunch of sites.
And he listed some sites up there that the Ministry of Natural Resources say those sites aren't there.
Yeah.
Yet they're bookable.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to get in there and they're going to spend how many hours looking for a site that does not exist?
Where is it?
Right. Most of the things I am seeing, the people that are against it, it's always, you're taking away my freedom of
Yeah.
You know, oh, I just like to go with the day, and I know I'm going to be on that lake, but do I want to camp on the south side? Yeah. Do I want to camp on the north side?
I like to tour all the empty sites and find the and best one that I like. And take a peek at them.
Like, yeah, view some of these mm-hmm. different ones, right? But most of them are citing safety issues.
That's what most people have, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also, the thing is, sometimes, depending on the weather, because I bring my photo gear, I do night photos and stuff like that too. So God knows I've got enough sunrise pictures, enough sunset pictures. But okay, well, if I sit on the north side, the moon's coming up over there. So if I can get I can't get that sight.
I want some star shots. Right? I want this. I want that. Exactly.
So the three sites that are on this lake, I can't get now.
Yeah.
Because
I'm going to be hitting my trees. And
Right. So, but that's just a personal thing for me.
Yes.
The pros, if you know a certain site is exactly what you're looking for, you can book it.
You can always go back to the same site.
Right. Like Ralph Bice using Algonquin.
Yes.
I know this is French River, but using Algonquin is a thing. There's that one site on Ralph Bice.
Don't say where it is.
There's that one site on Big Trout that I will take wherever I can, whenever I can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that you are going to have a site once you get to a lake.
Yes.
Knowing that, because there is part of, I've been with a few people that we got to get to the lake. We got to hurry up, pack up, get to that lake. Because it's fully booked tonight. So mm-hmm. we want to get a good site.
Yeah.
So then you just booting it to make your time. And then you've missed everything in between. Yeah.
And I don't know.
So with a specific site booking, you're not under the gun to.
Exactly. Exactly.
To do that.
So you're paddling on the lake, you know you're heading to a specific lake, and then you see somebody coming up behind you. It's like, paddle faster. They might be going where we're going.
Faster, faster, you fools.
They're catching up to us.
late arrivals know they have a site to go to.
Yes. So they know on Friday.
Yeah. You're not touring every site around the lake.
Yeah. I showed up at it's quarter three, quarter four, quarter, almost 5 o'clock. 5 p.m. is when I got to the site. Who wants to be looking for a site at 5 p.m.?
Mm.
A sunset at this time of year is an hour away at that time. Or actually now it is 5 p.m. because of the time change. Yeah. It's nice to know that you have a site.
Yep. If you get to your site and it's been destroyed and there's trash all over the place, then there's an actual record of who's had the site before you.
There is that. Plus the fact that if you get to a site and
the fire pit's still going.
Well, it's not just that, but I'm thinking for animal dangers. So if somebody's left a horrible site, dumped spaghetti in the forest, and there's food all over the place, and somebody's doesn't like using a thunderbox, so they're pooping in the site, and it's like, I can't stay here.
Then what do you do?
There's food everywhere. There's somebody's left their broken and half burned tent, and there's a wet sleeping bag over there. And why is somebody's pants over there? You don't want to stay on a site like that.
No.
But you've booked it specifically. You've got to stay there. So now you got to do a cleanup, scooping up food into the fire pit to try and burn it to keep the bears away. And it's man, oh man, because some people are irresponsible, and that's. It's humanity, right?
So at least you've got a record of that now. And when you get back out, you can go to them and say,
who's on this site? Because, holy, somebody's got to go clean it up.
And it's good for groups that need to have more than one site. They can be next to each other.
They can be adjacent.
Like scout groups and stuff like that. They go in. Okay, we can get two or three sites next to each other. And
And oftentimes, if they're close enough, there's normally almost always a path
through
between them. I don't know how many times hey, let's walk along this little trail here. Where's it go? Oh, look, there's another campsite.
Yeah.
It happens a lot.
Yep. So there's pros and cons to this system. You're not going to make everyone happy.
No.
All we can do is see how 2025 works and go from there. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe there's so much uproar about it and problems that come 2026, they just scrap it.
I don't see that happen. Once they, I've seen them do this with a couple parks now, and I don't think they're going to be backing down. They're embracing this new scheme because they've been doing it with Clarney and a couple other campgrounds, and it's the new way.
The other thing not everybody, there's a large portion of people saying, well, that's why I go Crownland camping.
Yeah. That's so much more there's so many more unknowns with Crownland mm-hmm. camping, unless you know the zone, know the area, and you're intimately familiar with it, or you're naturally adventurous. But if I'm going in there with my two young children and my wife.
You want a thunderbox and a.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ideally, because it's nice to have the comforts when you have small kids. And
yeah. So we'll see how it goes. But that's the latest uproar that's going around.
Mm-hmm.
I took Athena for her yearly vet check.
Oh.
And for anybody that has a canoe dog or a canoe cat, because I have seen those, or a canoe goat, my vet has recommended tick prevention year-round now, and a lot of vets apparently are doing this.
Yeah.
Because in Ontario, lower Ontario here, we're not getting the cold winter, so you're not getting the tick die-off.
Well, not getting the tick die-off, but also mm-hmm. the ticks are getting more and more active year-round just yep. because there was lack of snow.
Yeah. So that she's recommending... said, you know, I know you guys do from this day to this, the pills there you get once a month sort of deal, but I'd recommend doing it. And they're also recommending against parasites.
Oh, mm-hmm. so worms and
yeah.
treatments.
Yeah, there's worms. Yeah. Like there's one, I think it's a tapeworm or something that's going rampant through Oshawa.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So they're giving pills for that now too. They say, you know, the powers that be of the vet world, your dog should take one of these once a month. At $100 a pill?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think
so.
Are
you telling me that's because you want to make money? You want to make bank?
She says they're good once every 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So $400 a year as opposed to $1,200. So I said, you know, okay, give it to her just to make sure and we'll do it the once. And then we got home and she barfed everywhere. Yeah, you eat that grass because that's $100. So yeah, you might want to have a chit chat with your vet because like I say, my vet says they're starting to recommend tick prevention year round now. What do we got here? This one here, there's, according to Guinness World Records, an American man has finally fulfilled his dream of growing a pumpkin big enough to set sail in. Gary Christensen paddled 45.67 miles, 73 and a half kilometers, along the Columbia River in Washington to claim the record for longest journey by pumpkin boat paddling.
How gooey is a pumpkin? Like, to sit inside a pumpkin and paddle, for one, like,
you'd have to line it with something. Well. You'd put something in a rug or something in
there. You'd have to, because it's going to be gooey. Plus, they don't, I can't imagine they track very well.
And the fact that the actual category is longest journey by pumpkin boat paddling, in brackets. Have people motorized them? Is there a being towed?
I converted. I took the engine out of my jet ski and put it in my pumpkin.
Right? Is that a pumpkin that just had to go by? It took him 26 hours from October 12th to 13th. His hand-carved vessel, Punky Loafster. He's grown giant pumpkins since 2011. In 2013, he carved his first boat-sized pumpkin to compete in the West Coast Giant Pumpkin Regatta, which he's won the last 4 years.
Huh.
He's from Happy Valley, Oregon, and said, "This record attempt was a challenge I had long considered, finally deciding to pursue it this year when I grew a pumpkin suitable for the journey."
That's something.
Right? officially weighed and measured, 429.26 centimeters or 169 inches in circumference, and it weighs 1,214 pounds. Oof. Holy jumpins. It's about the weight of an adult camel or a grand piano.
He compared it to a camel? Because North America, we know how to compare that comparison.
Right? You never go to the zoo? They got camels at the zoo. It's like a quarter, third of a pumpkin, a third of an elephant.
Everybody can relate to a camel.
Yeah, one camel, one third of a pumpkin, of an elephant. 162 penguins?
What's the conversion rate? Well, it really depends what the species of elephant what's we're conver- talking about.
Conversion rate. Camel to pelicans. So October 11th, he carved the pumpkin into a boat, mounted a camera to it with a broomstick so he could record his journey. Final touches were adding the words, "It's real," to each side of the pumpkin so that any stunned passersby would have their curiosity.
Is actually a pumpkin?
That's right, yeah. He did over three legs, beating the previous record of 39.17 miles or 63.04 kilometers set in 2023. So somebody else had the record for 1 year.
Yeah.
he didn't have total smooth sailing. After a couple hours of paddling, the wind had strengthened to 35 miles per hour, 56 kilometers an hour. Waves were starting to come over the side of the pumpkin. They beached it. And with a soup cam, he decided that he would start carving some more. He calls the meat. Carving more pumpkin meat.
Yeah, the inside stuff, yeah.
Hoping to make the pumpkin float better for the rest of the journey. This reduced the weight, helping the pumpkin float a bit better for waves. I don't know. Is that against the rules? Because it's not the boat he started with.
Yeah.
I want this reviewed. As he began the second leg of his journey, he expected to paddle until he found a safe beach to camp overnight, but once darkness fell, he didn't feel it was safe to beach his pumpkin boat on the sand, as accidentally hitting just one sharp rock could puncture it.
And plus the animals would come and eat his
right
watercraft.
Middle of the night, yeah. What's that noise?
Is that a raccoon?
There's 50 raccoons eating my boat. He paddled through the night, waited for sunrise for a safe landing spot. 7:03 a.m. sun come up, found a safe spot to land, and after five hour 22-minute rest stop to sleep and eat, he set off on the third and final leg of his journey all the way to the finish line in Vancouver, Washington. It was both an incredible adventure and a record-breaking feat. So yes, you too can live your dreams and paddle your pumpkin.
We need somebody to do a whitewater course.
A whitewater pumpkin paddling course. If you make it down these rapids in your pumpkin, you get a certificate.
Yeah.
And you know there's going to be bodies and chunks of pumpkin everywhere at the bottom of the rapids.
Boom.
Okay, we're going to end this with a little bit of edumacation.
A little science.
Canyonlands National Park in Utah. Place to go if you want to see unique rock formations and colorful scenery, making it one of the best national parks. But as you say, all the national parks are going to say we're the best.
That's arguable.
Yeah. Home to famous viewpoints like Island in the Sky and the Needles. This national park is chock full of adventure for you and your crew to enjoy no matter what time of year you go. That said, you'll need to be a bit careful at this time if you're thinking about boating or rafting anytime soon. Be aware that a sediment slump has just altered the water flow at Canyonlands. Here's what you need to know. Between October 25th and 29th, a significant sediment slump occurred in Cataract Canyon's Narrow Canyon at River Mile 175.1. Approximately 300 to 350 meters of the river left shoreline collapsed into the main channel. This event has caused sediment and mud to shift, creating new rapids and altering water flow for about 3 miles upstream of the slump. While this sediment slump may be shocking to new visitors, they are not uncommon in the Cataract Canyon. Boating and rafting can still be enjoyed. However, due to rapidly changing conditions, National Park Service has reiterated that personal flotation devices are critical, especially between Dark Canyon and North Wash Access Point. Boaters should exercise extreme caution since the shifting sediment can create unpredictable currents and sudden obstacles. Stay informed about current river conditions by checking the Canyonlands National Park website and heed all safety recommendations while out and about. So the big question being,
what the heck's a slump?
Right? And we're not talking about a guy that plays baseball and just hasn't hit the ball in ages. Slumps are a type of landslide in which the moving material moves in a block, more or less, down a slope. The possible causes of slumping include earthquake shocks, thorough wetting, freezing, and thawing, undercutting, and loading of a slope.
It's basically a chunk.
Yeah, in slump. And this like, I looked up what a slump, sediment slump was, and they were using such big words. I had to read it like 6 times to understand it.
What are they trying to say?
So, yeah, I found some dummy down versions for me. In slump, a large sediment of sediment breaks off, a large segment of sediment breaks off in one piece rather than in lots of segments. It occurs when a base can no longer support the weight of what's on top. The sediment involved in slump is usually wet or clay-like, and water is often the factor that causes it to fall. Water either adds mass to the top layer of sediment or wears the soil away at the base, weakening the connection between the top and bottom layers. So it's not like a rock slide where all these rocks just start tumbling. This is like a big chunk. So picture somebody with a toupee, and their toupee starts sliding forward on their head.
It doesn't break up into small pieces. It falls.
It's just one big sliding section. Then there's flows. Flows are the result of water mixing with sediment to form a soupy mass of rock, water, soil, and other materials. The resulting mixture slips downhill. Mud flows and avalanches are examples of this type of mass movement that occurs rapidly and can be quite destructive.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then there's the creep. And we're not talking about Derek. You know I'm going to do that one. Creep is a type of gradual flow, one that can take several years to unfold. With creep, sediment moves slowly down an incline. The adherence of the sediment to the bedrock is hampered, but not completely destroyed. Creep often occurs in areas that have experienced repeated freezing and thawing, which changes the structure and composition of soil. Creep can even occur on gentle slopes. Have you ever seen trees or telephone poles bent at strange angles in relation to the ground? Creep is the culprit.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, so often you come across these new little things.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever heard of a sediment slump before.
Or at least not. Yes. We know from what it is that we've seen it. Like there was a recent one 6 weeks ago in BC, in California and Vancouver in Canada. We often get slumps and flows just because of rain, heavy rain, steep cliff sides, and so everything gets saturated. And instead of the mountain being like however many megatons of dirt, it becomes like twice that when you include all the water that's entrained. And it's just the gravity wins out in the day.
It is down you go. Yeah. So if you are heading to the Canyonlands and you're planning on doing some paddling, make sure you go through their website and check out all the alerts and keep yourself safe. But yeah, that's pretty educational.
It is. It was interesting.
Yeah. And that's all I got this week. Anything? You got anything else?
Nothing else.
Nothing else? Well, again, glad you guys had a good trip there. And
yes.
Would have been nice to see Mike and Marcus and all. We'll have to do another meetup next spring or something.
Yeah. Try to, yeah.
Yeah.
They do it twice a year.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. 455 now.
Ooh, there we go.
Right? If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.